This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour. This is the part of the program where we do the big picture. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler addressing you here. And boy, do we need big picturing today, because the goal of this segment of the program is to try to interpret for people the things that you are seeing going out there in the real economic world. From reaching record levels in January, stock prices have plunged globally. And it's not just stock prices. It's almost every asset class, from stocks and bonds to commodities. The plunge in asset prices has been global from the January highs. I mean, let's just look at what happened in 1 week's time. The Dow went from almost 26,400 to a low of 24,200. That's a drop of 2,200 points, for an 8.3 drop from the highs that it reached. The S&P from 2,872 to 2,619, drop of 8.8%. NASDAQ from 7505 to 6874, a drop of 8.4%. And the Russell 2000, 1599 to 1486, that's a drop of 7.1%. Now, it hasn't just been stocks either. Oil prices went from $67 a barrel to $59. Gold is down close to $50 an ounce, from 1365 to 1317. And interest rates, normally a safe haven, have remained stubbornly high, with the 10-year treasury at 2.5 and a 30-year bond at 3.16. And wherever you look, there is blood in the streets. And you have to reflect on this. What started as a record-breaking year, full of optimism for all assets over stronger economic growth and what was called the Trump euphoria, has turned into outright panic and fear. So the question we're going to ask on the big picture today is, Jim, what the hell just happened?
That's probably the best way you can express it. What the hell just happened? You know, before we get into that, I think it's very important to put a little color and perspective what led up to this market storm. And you can really see this sort of building and the change and transitioning that was taking place within the markets that began last September with a series of market-related events that began to form. First of all, let's talk about, and this is going to play a key role as we look at the markets, where they are now and where they're likely to head in the future. Number one, the price of oil bottomed at $42 a barrel last summer and began a liftoff from $45 a barrel in September to a recent rise of $66 in January. And along with that, secondly, the dollar began a descent beginning in December 2016, when the dollar index was at 103, it dropped all the way down to 88. And commodity prices in dollar itself travel in opposite directions. A third factor, interest rates began to rise with a falling dollar and rising oil prices. Last September, we got down to a yield of just about 2% on the 10-year Treasury note. Here we are on this Friday, and we've got a yield on treasuries at 2.85%. The VIX, which measures volatility, it's often called the fear index, got all the way down below 9. It spiked. The VIX, which got down to roughly under 9 in January, spiked recently all the way to 50. And we're going to talk about that VIX, because it's key in terms of what you saw in this violent change that we saw in stock prices, including this Friday, where we had almost a 1,000-point swing from the lows of the day to the highs of the day. So the stage was set for something to happen. Now, two perceptions have begun to be formed, and these are going to unfold and develop even further. One, with rising oil prices, an economy that was picking up an economic growth, the perception of rising inflation, and we're seeing hints of that. Number two, another one was an era of falling interest rates has now transitioned to an era of rising interest rates. Those two key factors will come into play because last Friday, as we had that sell-off of over 600 points, we had a spike in interest rates that were triggered by the unemployment report that came in with stronger wage gains and more jobs created than was originally anticipated. So the stage was set, John, for an event to take place. What was needed was a catalyst, and that catalyst came last Friday with that unemployment report showing strong jobs and a jump in the rise in wages.
And this represents a pretty classic picture because, you know, you had the catalyst, it was there, but underlying that, in other words, this had been building from some time, you saw the drop in the dollar, the rise in oil, and the rise in interest rates, and then the catalyst is simply that thing that triggers it. And that's typically what happens when you get major market moves. But speaking of major market moves, why so violent this time?
Well, a number of factors. There was a one-sided bet that had been in play for 2 years now, which is low volatility, and there were a lot of funds and ETNs that were created to take advantage of it. It was like a one-way bet, and it was an easy way to make money. Throw into that, algorithm trades kicked in, triggering a selling detonation that continued all this week. Much of the selling, almost 90% of algo trading, in liquidation by index ETFs and ETNs. So this is something we discussed last year, John, when we talked about the bubble in index funds, which were driving stocks up. Well, you just got a glimpse what happens when those index ETFs unwind with selling. Just as they bid up the price of stocks as money flowed in, they bid down the stocks or sell off those stocks as money flows out. So we had a reversal. So you had a combination of algo trading. You had the unwinding of ETNs based on low volatility that were highly leveraged, and we're going to get more into that in just a second. And you throw all that mix in, and you're seeing what happens when index funds and ETFs liquidate. You also had, and something that we need to talk about here, is financial engineering, which exacerbated a volatile situation.
Okay, wait a minute. Stop there. Explain that.
Well, the problem erupted and deepened by what we've seen is a bevy of exchange-traded products that allow investors to make major wages on the VIX, or what we call the fear index. And for a long period of time, the VIX had been in decline and at a very low level, some of the lowest levels that we've seen in a long time. And so this was the case that was in existence for almost a two-year period of time. So just like a trade that becomes very popular, almost like a one-way trade, you had everybody loaded up on one side of the boat betting on low volatility, because despite all the events last year in the latter part of 2016, it didn't matter if there was an event in the Middle East, if Rocket Man was firing rockets, geopolitical events, spikes in oil, political turmoil in Washington, the markets remained calm. It's been an escalator ride for most asset classes since the November 8th elections in 2016. And the VIX reflected that. Low volatility. Well, guess what? All of that changed. What was going on here was a big bet was being made on shorting volatility, which in financial jargon was a wager that markets would remain calm. And of course, nothing stays the same forever. In practice, this what was being done here, John, was basically selling insurance against turbulence, because the VIX was so subdued, it seemed like an easy way to make money is sell insurance. In essence, short the VIX, because it didn't do anything. It didn't matter. There were some short spikes up to the 17 or 16 level and 14 or 15, but as quickly as they spiked, it went right back down and even lower. So big money was made in the last 2 years as the VIX declined and remained calm. It's kind of like selling puts, which is an advantage. It's kind of like insurance against a downturn in a stock or a stock market. So you're selling insurance, and it's like a no-brainer. Hey, everything's going up. I'll just sell some insurance that covers you when things go down. It's a no-brainer because the markets keep going up. And that's exactly what we saw. It was like an escalator ride from November 8th to January 26th. And so when markets are calm, like they were these last 18 months, all of a sudden you have financial engineering coming in and you had new ETFs and exchange-traded notes that came in that employ leverage to increase those returns. And anytime you have calmness in the market in low interest rates, as we've seen over the last 18 months, you have leverage being elevated and brought in to enhance returns, because it seems like a one-way bet, because you can borrow, number one, at a very low interest rate, and with things going up double digits as they did last year, over, you know, the market's up over 20%, and you're borrowing at 2%, it seems like a no-brainer, and it seemed that way, and people were making a lot of money. And the longer it continues, the more leverage came into the market. The problem is when events erupt, as they did this previous Friday, volatility can beget more volatility, triggering a lethal feedback loop of selling. And that's certainly what took place that we've seen all this week. So there's a lot of things that happen. And once again, below the surface, the markets were changing subtly, beginning with interest rates, which bottomed last year and began to rise and become elevated beginning in September. The price of oil, which bottomed last summer and began to rise in the fall. And of course, preceding both of these events was the drop in the dollar, which peaked in December of 2016 and hit a low in the early weeks of February. So you add all these things together, underneath the surface, we were transitioning to a new paradigm shift in the markets and the economy, John, and it just took a catalyst to trigger the event, and that's certainly what happened in the last week.
You know, Jim, usually when you see these events, it's a credit-related event or, you know, somebody just gets in trouble financially. But I haven't heard anything in particular, but somebody has had to have lost a lot of money in this last week.
Well, there is. You had the collapse of an option trading fund, LJM, Preservation and Growth Fund, kind of oxymoron. It lost, John, 80% of its value in a single week. They basically went from over $800 million in the fund down to $140. It's being liquidated. And there was also a story out there, I can't vouch and say this is true, on the social media site Reddit. It's a platform people use. And there was someone on there called Lil Kanya. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But this small investor began investing in these trading ETNs on volatility. He claims he started out with $50,000 and pyramided that into $4 million in 2.5 years. And then he lost it all in a single week. It's very similar to what we've seen in the collapse of Bitcoin, where investors last year saw it go from $1,000 to what was it, $19,000. Everybody was jumping on board. I heard one story of a friend of mine who's in the investment business told me about a client he had who took his entire IRA, several hundred thousand dollars, pulled his account, went into Bitcoin when Bitcoin was around 18,000. Well, he's lost 50 or 60% of his money. So this is the kind of thing that you see. And once again, low volatility, because what did we talk about last year? What was the topic that most of our technicians talked about? Is how the market, no matter what events were happening politically, economically, or even the Fed, what the Fed was doing, there wasn't as much as a 2% ripple in the market. We hadn't had a 5% correction. And it just plowed along, just like an escalator going up smoothly, gradually. And we had double-digit gains without even a hiccup. Well, my friends, we just got our first hiccup.
So that's pretty much the picture. You know, when you put it all together, you had a catalyst that was provided by the unemployment report. I call it the trigger. That was the thing that made it fly. Prior to that, the stage was being set because the dollar was falling, oil prices were rising along with interest rates. You throw in leveraged ETNs and algo trading and then the winding of ETFs and voila, we had the fast and furious correction that we saw over the last week with typically everybody wondering what's happening.
And, you know, John, and the other thing about it, usually when you see these sequence of events, and we'll get into this when we get into the big picture part two today, but the plunge that we saw was in investment markets, and it was global. It was a plunge in stocks. It was a plunge in bonds. It was a plunge in commodity prices. However, what made this rather unique as we dived into the weeds all week is, unlike all the past corrections that we've seen since 2008, they were all triggered by big moves in credit spreads that has not happened this time around. Rates have ticked up, but credit default swaps remain calm. And so usually, you know, I think of the last eruption that we had was the beginning of 2016, where the stock market went down every single week for six continuous weeks. What was triggering that? You saw a spike in credit spreads. I know, because we went into the market and we were buying distressed corporates at that time. On some of our bonds, we were getting 10% yields because this was the Chinese slowdown. People were worried about the Fed. The Fed just raised interest rates in December of 2015. Likewise, if you go back to 2013, we had the taper tantrum where 10-year treasuries went from 1.6 to 3%. But that didn't seem to phase the stock market. Go back to 2011, where we had close to a 20% correction in the stock market. We had Fukushima. We had the Arab Spring. We had a spike in oil prices over $100 a barrel and the downgrading of U.S. debt from AAA to AA as credit spreads widened. That did not happen this time around. We were watching credit spreads closely. We were looking at credit default swaps.
Okay, I want to go back and look at the something you mentioned, the uptick in interest rates prior to this run that we had here. Isn't that, what, of interest or threat to the markets?
You know, eventually, yes, that's going to be, but not at the moment. There are a number of reasons why the recent rise has more good aspects to it than bad. Number one, the recent move up in yields has not just been here. We've seen rates rise in Europe where, you know, at one time, almost a third of all sovereign debt was yielding a negative rate of return. Rates have risen in Europe. They've risen in Japan. So it's been a global rate and it's reflecting higher economic growth here and abroad. Number two, the rise in yields has more to do with this economic pickup globally and a pickup in inflation, which, you know, when you see economic growth pick up, the demand for credit rises. And when demand for something rises, what do? Prices rise. That price was a rise in interest rates. And number three, despite the rise in yields, if you take a look at where we are today and compare that to historically, we're still, even where we are today, at historic low levels. Normally towards the end of a business cycle, if you look at the past, we would be looking at 5 or 6% interest rates today when we're now, what, close to 3%. And then finally, despite the Fed pulling back on liquidity and raising interest rates, two major central banks in the world, the ECB and the Bank of Japan, are still in a quantitative easing mode, flooding money into this market. So there's still a lot of liquidity in this market that could drive prices higher. And the other thing, once again, that I think that really characterized this, because this is something that we were looking at, because right now, I don't care where you're looking at the ISM numbers, all the leading economic indicators, all of them are ticking up with the ISM service sector almost at a record high at 59. So we're not seeing credit spreads blow out or credit default swaps spike like in past corrections. And that's something you really want to keep your eyes on, because if there is going to be trouble somewhere, it's going to be brewing with, let's say, something that would influence where the economy is heading, because you're looking at a late stage of a business cycle. So you're following leading economic indicators. You're following what's going on in the credit market in trying to get a handle of, okay, when are we coming close to a top? What are the risks of the recession? And you've heard this on television. When it comes to the economy, this is certainly not a correction based on anything that is happening in the economy, whether it's economic growth, it's the leading economic indicators, or what's going on in the credit market. So if there was trouble ahead, the first place we would want to look is the credit markets, because they will telegraph it long in advance of the actual topping of the markets and also the economy. So once again, this is a little unusual. It's a lot more technical, and I believe it's more of a transition. So three key issues that we've seen here. One, the rise of leverage, which is what you expect when interest rates remain historically at the lowest levels in history. Number two, the markets just seemed relentless in their climb. All last year and beginning after the election of President Trump, the markets went up. Every week, every month, we were hitting new records. It almost sounded like a broken record when we came on the show every weekend. We would say, well, Stocks are up this week, another new record in the markets. So when that happens, individuals and sometimes hedge fund managers, a lot of these exotic financial instruments out there, what they will do is they will leverage up. I mean, why not? If the market's going up double digits and you can borrow at low single digits at rates of 1 to 2% and make 20% on your money, I mean, it's just like this so-called social media gentleman that talked about, you know, taking $50,000 and pyramiding it to $4 million. I don't know if that's the case, if this is a real story or not, but certainly we saw a lot of pyramiding that was going on in these leveraged ETNs and some of these ETFs. So we saw a rise in leverage. We saw financial engineering with these new products that were shorting volatility. And the problem, John, with all of this is the regulators are simply not keeping track of risk. So what we've seen is a financial accident. Leverage ETNs blew up in some funds. That triggered a cascade of selling that was amplified by algorithmic trading. And then we saw a freshet of liquidations by ETFs.
Yeah, and if we had to just come up with a picture, it's a technical cataclysm triggered by a particular event after there had been a buildup underneath, and that is transforming us now into a new paradigm for the markets.
That's pretty much it.
And I guess the question we ask is, number one, what does that mean for investors? Because are we at a market top, or are we going into an economic flip over and a slide down into a recession? Remember, we've been talking for some time about the extended business cycle. All of that will occupy us coming up next in the second part of The Big Picture as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.
What everyone wants? Everyone wants the ability to retire and live well. Sounds easy, but it isn't. It requires careful planning. That is something not everyone knows how to do, and you may need help to plan, implement, and monitor your progress, assessing where you are now and where you want to be in the future. That is where Financial Sense Advisors can help. And unlike many advisors who sell you products you don't need, at Financial Sense Advisors, we are fiduciaries, which means we put your interest first. We do well when you do well.
Call Financial Sense Advisors now and let us help you to make the change from just retiring to thriving in retirement. Call now, toll free, 888-486-3939. Again, that's 888-486-3939. Investment advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. In case you didn't know it, the Financial Sense News Hour is more than just our weekend show. We also have a weekday program featuring key economic experts, which is only available to our premium members. Here's part of one of the interviews from this last week.
I think the thing to keep in mind when looking at the recent correction is that these things do tend to happen over time. You're correct. It was one of the longest stretches without any corrections on record. In fact, it was the longest going back to 1926 without a 3% correction in the S&P ever. On average, the S&P has 3.4 corrections of at least 5% in every year. So this was unique, and this is more returning to normal. What we want to be cautious of when thinking about how the market's going to look going forward was, is this the initial crack? Because market tops are not events, they're processes. And usually the initial crack doesn't mark the final peak. What normally happens is the market stages a rally, and we need to watch the quality of the rally. We've had great, what technicians would call, participation, where a lot of stocks are moving up together. That's very healthy because you have a problem in one area. There's lots of other areas that are still doing well. If on these ensuing rally, you get less participation, and then you get another pullback, and then a rally with even less participation, et cetera, then that's what a market top looks like.
Back into the big picture here. Jim Poplava, John Lefter here with you. Having told you exactly what it was just happened, now we have to examine that question, which to us is of paramount importance. What does this mean for investors? And to do that, we'll have to answer four successive questions right now. And let me just enumerate them for you, and then we'll take them on a one-by-one basis. Number one, is the stock market topping out? Number two, has a new bear market begun in equities? Number three, are we heading into a recession? And number four, what should you be watching if any of the above items is about to unfold? And we're going to jump in here as we conclude the events of the last week and what they actually portend for the future.
What we're going through here now, John, is a major paradigm shift, very characteristic of a late stage business cycle that just got extended, when you think about it, by major tax cuts. And you normally don't see that. As we commented last year when the tax bill was finally passed, and we commented at the beginning of the year, you normally don't see economic stimulus come in at the end of a business cycle. The second thing that we commented on is that fiscal policy and monetary policy are going in opposite directions. That's okay right now, but eventually that's going to cause a major problem. But what we're seeing now is all kinds of money that is being applied in stimulus. And if you look at this new budget deal that they're trying to get through here for a 2-year period, they're also going to increase spending by an additional $300 billion. So folks, in 2 more years, we're going to be looking at $1 trillion deficits here in the U.S. So normally, when you get around 7, 8, 9 years, as we are right now, you would be seeing this business cycle conclude. We'd probably be in a recession with the Fed raising interest rates. That's not taking place. As we talked about, the economic numbers have been accelerating. I don't care if you're looking at the ISM, all the leading indicators are on an upswing, pointing to higher economic growth as a result of these tax cuts and this stimulus that's being applied. And then on top of that, if this tax budget bill goes through for 2 years, so they don't have to go through these machinations every month or every couple months, they're going to increase spending by another $300 billion. So there is major economic stimulus that is being applied to the economy at the end of a business cycle, which is so unusual, and especially when you're in the middle of a Fed rate raising cycle. So we are now seeing a transition to a major paradigm shift, very characteristic of that late cycle. Now, what does this mean? We are, number one, going from an era of falling interest rates to an era of rising interest rates. One of the things that we paid a lot of attention to, typically when you see big market sell-offs, as we certainly saw in this last 5 days, you normally see the safe haven trade go into play. Things move in. There's a rotation into the risk-off trade. You see utilities do well, consumer staples, healthcare, and you see a big rally in bonds. None of those happened. Utilities fell, healthcare fell, staples fell along with the rest of the market, and the yield on 10-year and 30-year treasuries remained elevated. Number two, we are going from this period of low inflation to rising inflation. We're not going to see hyperinflation, but the level of inflation is increasing. We're seeing it in wages. We're seeing it in commodity prices. We're seeing it in the cost of goods. If you take a look at the ISM report for the prices paid component, number three, we're going from a low economic environment where for 8 years, the economy failed to grow more than 2% a year, the first time since World War II, to an era of rising economic growth, at least in the latter stages of this business cycle. And the reason I say for the latter stages, eventually the Fed's going to raise interest rates to a point and do what they always do, which is crash the economy and take us into recession. And number four, we're going to a very precarious Fed monetary cycle of normalization. The reason I'm saying that is the Fed is going through and not rolling over its bonds. It's shrinking its balance sheet. But one of the problems the Fed is going to run into is that a lot of those bonds are mortgage-backed bonds. And typically, when interest rates are going down, these mortgage pools pay back quicker because people either sell their homes or they refinance. With rates rising, the payoff on mortgages tends to slow down. And there's another thing that happens too. The Fed, even though it doesn't mark to market, may be sitting on losses on many of the bonds that they purchased and how that could impact. And they got to be careful because at the end of the year, the Fed pays all of its bills of running the Federal Reserve. Any excess interest that they earn, they remit to Congress. And that figure has been over $100 billion a year. You start taking losses, that disappears, and nothing gets the attention of the Fed than an inquiring Congress wanting to curb the Fed's powers. So we are in a very precarious monetary cycle that is unusual than any monetary cycle that preceded it. A lot of it had to do with this past recovery when the Fed embarked on quantitative easing, taking its balance sheet from $800 billion to $4.5 trillion. So now they're not only raising interest rates, but they're also shrinking the value of their portfolio.
One of the patterns, Jim, you've enumerated in the past is that there is actually a series of events, how a bull market ends, bear market begins. Number one, bonds peak first, stocks then peak second, and commodities are the last thing to peak and roll.
That has been the pattern that we have seen existing almost for the last four decades. And the sequence between all these three asset classes can vary in each business cycle. I want to just take the last two. I want to take the recession of 2001 and the recession of 2007. If we look at the recession that began in March of 2001, it ended in November of 2001. It lasted about 8 months. Bonds peaked in January of 2000. Stocks peaked, I'm talking about the S&P, in August of 2000. So an eight-month spread between the peaking of the bond market and the peak in stocks. And commodities peaked a year later in January of 2001, 12 months after bonds peaked. Now let's fast forward to the next recession, which began in December of 2007 and ran all the way to June of 2009, lasting 18 months. Bonds peaked in the summer of 2007 in June. Stocks peaked 4 months later in October of 2007, and this was a long spread in terms of when commodities peak. If you can remember back to 2008, that was when oil went from $50 a barrel in 2007 to almost $150 a barrel in July of 2008. So commodities would peak 13 months later. So I want to throw in another element here that's going to play a key role here, which is the price of oil. Now, just taking a look at the recession of 2001, in December of 99 to November of 2000, the price of oil went up 38%. If we take a look at February of 2007 to June of 2008, the price of oil went up 145%. And if we take a look at the bottom of oil in February 2016 to this price of $59 a barrel on this Friday, the price of oil has gone up 127%. Now, why that's key, as I talked about leading up to this correction that we're going through now, was the rise in oil and interest rates preceded by a fall in the dollar. Remember, commodities in the dollar travel in the opposite direction. There was a paper done on oil shocks by a professor, James Hamilton, out of the University of California. And I want to just spend a couple minutes here because it's rather instructive. And he talked about the price increases during a period of time and when the business cycle peaked. For example, we saw a rise in prices in oil and gasoline from November 1947 to January 1948. The price of oil rose 37%. The economy peaked in November of 48. Fast forward to the next recession. The price of oil was up 10%. We had a recession in July of 53. Fast forward to the next recession. Between January 57 to February 57, the price was up 10%, and the economy peaked in August of 57. Then we had a period in 1969 and 70 where the prices went up 8% a year. The economy peaked in 1969. And then, of course, everybody remembers the oil embargo and the Yom Kippur War in 1973. The prices up 16% in 73, up 51% in 1974. The economy peaked in November 73 and went into a nice prolonged recession. Fast forward again, 79 to 1980, the price of oil up 57%. The economy peaked in January of 1980. Once again, 1981, from November 80 to February 81, the price of oil up 45%, the Iranian Revolution, and we went into a recession in July of 81. Fast forward to 1990, August to October, the price of oil up 93%. That was the beginning of the first Gulf War. And we were in a recession by July of that year. Once again, December 99 to November of 2000, oil prices up 30%. And the economy peaked in March of 01. And once again, in 2008, from February 2007 to June of 2008, the price of oil up 145%, and the economy in recession began in December of 2007. So key things that we're watching right now that are going to tell us how this is playing out, and we believe we've moved into that final transition of the business cycle and a market cycle. Number one, we're watching the dollar. It has been falling since December of 2016. We're watching the price of oil, which has been going up as the dollar has fallen. It's gone through a corrective phase here. It was close to $67 a barrel. We're at $59. That is still more than double than where we were in February of 2016. Interest rates, which we believed bottom, are rising and holding up. That's the one thing we did not see in this market correction that we've seen in every single correction since 2008, is anytime the stock market would convulse or go through a major hiccup or correction, we would see the safety trade take place. That safety trade was not taking place this time around. And the other thing we're watching is the interest rates along with those credit spreads, and we did not see it in credit default swaps or the blowout of credit spreads. So in this last phase of the business cycle, you are seeing a major rotation within the market. And I think that's what's going to come out of all of this, is we see economic growth pick up, as we see the dollar fall, as we see oil prices rise, interest rates rise. There will be a what I call a phase in leadership as we move from something that we're watching very closely, consumer discretionary, technology, cyclical stocks, and then we're watching materials, energy, financials, and commodities. Because you think about it, what happens when the price of oil rises? Well, it rises at the pump. People pay more for gasoline. That takes money out of the pockets of consumers that they would normally have to spend in discretionary spending. And you've seen this in every spike of oil. If you look at, for example, just going back and taking a look at some of the ETFs that have come into play, like consumer discretionary, you've seen them forecast in advance a turn in the economy with rising oil prices as discretionary spending begins to cut back. And the other thing that you typically see in this final stage of the stock market is you'll see leadership emerge as oil prices rise, which we think they're going to do. You see leadership emerge in the energy sector. And towards the end, you have two sectors that dominate the market. And this is just like a number one clue that we've come to the end of the road. And that is the dominance in the markets of energy and consumer staples. Energy is still rising and is a leader because of the rise in oil. But gradually, fund managers sense the economy is beginning to turn, and you see that safety trade come in as fund managers transition to consumer staples, which are more immune to an economic downturn.
Having framed it the way you did, Jim, how do things look like now as we move forward?
You know, the one thing that we've been watching all week is the typical rotation that we usually see towards the end of the market top energy leading, consumer staples, utilities, and healthcare. John, that did not happen in this last week. Utilities fell. Consumer staples look like they fell off a cliff. They plunged in the last week. So healthcare is also down, maybe not as much, but it's down as well. So this looks more like the unwinding of these ETNs and ETFs that we've been warning you about, the bubble that we talked about throughout last year. We brought this subject up in April last year of the bubble that was developing in these passive index funds. Another asset class that still remains elevated, and this is just backing up once again that we've seen treasury yields, because usually when you see, and especially the speed in which this market corrected, where you were talking about 1,000-point swings, down 500, down 600 points, rotations like we've never seen before. Here we are in this Friday, and we have elevated yields on treasuries, both on 10-year notes and 30-year bonds. So once again, this reinforces what we're seeing. We're transitioning to a higher interest rate environment, higher economic growth, and rising inflation. So we're following the pattern of the last market peaks that we've seen play out over four decades. Bonds, in our estimate, have peaked. The next asset class will be stocks. And then finally, commodities. So in my view, the market has further to run.
So what all this means then, Jim, is what you're saying here is that this was a market squall. It's going to play out. And out of this, however, will come a new paradigm where we'll see higher economic growth, higher inflation, and higher interest rates. How are you going to play this?
You know, it's one of the reasons we've been rotating out of sectors for our clients and moving towards what we call the final phase of this bull market and economic cycle. Because at various parts of the business cycle, there's usually about three phases. You see a leadership emerge. At the bottom of a business cycle, you see small caps, you see technology, consumer discretionary do very, very well. And then you start to see things like the safety trade, utilities, healthcare, consumer staples begin to weaken. When you get to the final phase of the market, once again, you're going to look for leadership changes. We're seeing that in materials. We're seeing it. I think energy hasn't got its legs yet. It was starting to rise until everything sold off. And that's the one thing that characterized these downturns, which we saw in 2008, which we are now seeing now. This sell-off hit all asset classes. It hit corporate bonds, hit stocks, and it also hit commodities as well, with the price of gold and the price of oil falling. So, you know, once again, John, we are transitioning for the final phase. And as we get into that final phase and we see more signs that things are approaching a peak, a fall in the LEIs, they begin to weaken, a weakening in momentum where basically you're seeing the generals or the large cap stocks as the only ones left on the battlefield. That's when we'll begin to transition. We already have a battle plan of what we're going to do when this thing ends and where we're going to rotate sector wise and the assets we're going to be going into. But right now, we are positioning ourselves for this final run up.
Now, as the weeks and months ahead unfold, what will it look like? What should we be keying in on?
You know, one of the things that we're going to watch is oil. We think oil prices are still heading higher because of supply and demand characteristics and the work down of inventories. We also are watching energy to see if it gets its legs and begins to lead. We're watching also a breakdown in consumer discretionary, especially if you see a jump in energy prices and also the break of transports. When you think about it, what does rising energy costs mean, or rising oil prices cost more to transport goods, and it costs more for the consumer. It takes money out of his pocketbook. And towards the end, we should see energy and consumer staples as the two leaders in the market, followed by utilities and healthcare.
So you're going to act on the assumption, I mean, not assumption, but on the determination is a better way of putting it, based on your analysis, that this is nothing more than a correction.
That's right. And remember, 10% corrections, which we just got a little bit over that, that is not uncommon. We haven't had one in almost 2 years. So this is, in our opinion, technical correction that was amplified and exacerbated by index ETFs and ETNs, paving the way, in our opinion, and transitioning to the final phase of what we think of this economic recovery and bull market. How long will it play? A lot of it is going to depend on what the Fed does, how aggressive they get. But if it carries over into next year, we will have set records again in terms of the longest running business cycle and the longest running bull market. Now, remember, we just got a massive $1.5 trillion tax cut, and Congress is talking about increasing spending in the next 2 years by $300 billion. So fiscal policy is acting like we're in the recession coming out of it instead of what is normally done at the end of a business cycle. So this is going to be unusual in terms of its length, how it extends, how it plays out.
You know, Jim, as we round this whole thing out, if we look at the media right now, you're hearing doom and gloom. This is it. This is the 1929 crash. Remember, we've been hearing about the imminent crash ever since 2008. The market's getting ready to crash again. It was the imminent crash of the dollar, the imminent crash of the market. But this isn't it, is what we're saying here. That's what I'm hearing.
John, it really isn't. I mean, we started out the year coming off double-digit gains in the market last year, and we were up high single digits. If you look at where we are as of this Friday, here's where we stand. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 2%. If you take a look at the S&P 500, it's down 2%. If you want to look at the NASDAQ, it's down less than 0.5%, and the NASDAQ 100 is actually up 0.25%. So basically what we did, we had this fast and furious sell-off. But basically, we gave back the gains of the first of the year, which was record after record that we saw every single week. It was beginning to sound like a broken record. We gave all those gains back. We're down about 2%. Now, could this get worse? Could we have further selling yet? Well, maybe. That could happen too. But at least when we're looking at the things that matter most, oil prices have come back. Interest rates are still hovering at those high levels. And I think that's what this market is doing. It's adjusting to the fact we're probably going to be at the 3% level. It'll be interesting if we stabilize at 3% or if we head higher. Now, if we head higher to 3.5% or 3.6% on the 10-year note, we could be running into serious problems, but we would see a couple of things. Number one, we would see credit spreads start to blow out, signaling that there's trouble. Because remember, what does rising rates mean? It means you're going to pay more in interest. Those that are leveraged are going to get hurt the most. And so I'm not saying that these things won't change, because eventually they will. But at least right now, everything that we're following is telling us this was more of a technical glitch and a mishap created by financial engineering.
Any advice to investors on this?
You really need to be actively managing your portfolio. This idea of staying pat and index funds is bound to end up in pain. And you just saw a good example of what happens when these index ETFs and index mutual funds unwind. You just saw it take place in these last 5 days. You know, one of the things that we always try to say here, bull markets are like escalators. And if you look at a chart of the S&P 500 from November all the way to January 26, it just looks like an escalator going up at a 45-degree angle. Unfortunately, corrections and bear markets are elevators. They plunge. They don't go down gradually. So in the meantime, stay tuned, folks. This bull market is not over yet.
You know, after weeks like this, I always say, well, that was sort of one of those weeks that was, wasn't it? It makes news reporting on the financial arena somewhat interesting. What do you think we're going to be doing in the weeks to come here on the show?
You know, we're going to be watching the markets closely, and I think everybody will, to see that it stabilizes, that, you know, the unwinding of these ETFs and ETNs in this volatility trade as it completes itself. So we're going to be watching the markets for stabilization. We're also going to be looking at policy coming out of Washington. And of course, the big thing coming up in March, Powell's first FOMC meeting is chairman of the Fed. What does the Fed say? Most of the words coming out of most Fed chairmen and Fed governors over the last week have been, hey, This isn't changing our view. We still plan on raising interest rates 3 times, and that's what the market is pricing in. A high probability of a rate hike coming as soon as March, with another one coming possibly in June. So we're going to be watching that. We're going to watch economic growth, the LEIs, as this tax money begins to kick in. What are consumers doing? I imagine that confidence has been a bit shaken given what's happened here in the last week. But paychecks, take-home pay is going up beginning in the month of February. We're going to see if that money gets spent, put into the economy. So a lot of things to watch. Just as we said at the beginning of the year, this was not going to be your normal year where, you know, it's just be played out according to, hey, the market will be up 4 or 5%. And what we said is watch for volatility. Well, we just got the first bout of it this week. So all of that coming up in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.